This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information and to find out how you can volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Chalk and the Painter by J. Sheridan LeFanu. For he is not a man as I am, that we should come together. Neither is there any that might lay his hand upon us both. Let him, therefore, take his rod away from me, and let not his fear terrify me. There exists at this moment, in good preservation, a remarkable work of Schalken's. The curious management of its lights constitutes, as usual in his pieces, the chief apparent merit of the picture. I say apparent, for in its subject, and not in its handling, however exquisite, consists its real value. The picture represents the interior of what might be a chamber in some antique religious building, and its foreground is occupied by a female figure in a species of white robe, part of which is arranged so as to form a veil. The dress, however, is not that of any religious order. In her hand the figure bears a lamp, by which alone her figure and face are illuminated, and her features wear such an arch smile as well becomes a pretty woman when practicing some prankish roguery. In the background, and, excepting where the dim red light of an expiring fire serves to define the form, in total shadow, stands the figure of a man dressed in the old Flemish fashion, in an attitude of alarm, his hand being placed upon the hilt of his sword, which he appears to be in the act of drawing. There are some pictures which impress one, I know not how, with a conviction that they represent not the mere ideal shapes and combinations which have floated through the imagination of the artist, but scenes, faces, and situations which have actually existed. There is in that strange picture something that stamps it as the representation of a reality. And such in truth it is, for it faithfully records a remarkable and mysterious occurrence, and perpetuates in the face of the female figure, which occupies the most prominent place in the design, an accurate portrait of Rose Velderkaust, the niece of Gerard Dow, the first and, I believe, the only love of Godfrey Schalken. My great-grandfather knew the painter well, and from Schalken himself he learned the fearful story of the painting, and from him, too, he ultimately received the picture itself as a bequest. The story and the picture have become heirlooms in my family, and having described the latter, I shall, if you please, attempt to relate the tradition which has descended with the canvas. There are few forms on which the mantle of romance hangs more ungracefully than upon that of the uncouth Schalken. The boorish but most cunning worker in oils, whose pieces delight the critics of our day almost as much as his manners disgusted the refined of his own, and yet this man, so rude, so dogged, so slovenly, in the midst of his celebrity, had in his obscure but happier days played the hero in a wild romance of mystery and passion. When Schalken studied under the immortal Gerard Dow, he was a very young man, and in spite of his phlegmatic temperament, he at once fell over head and ears in love with the beautiful niece of his wealthy master. Rose Velderkaus was still younger than he, having not yet attained her 17th year, and, if tradition speaks truth, possessed all the soft and dimpling charms of the fair, light-haired Flemish maidens. The young painter loved honestly and fervently. His frank adoration was rewarded. He declared his love and extracted a faltering confession in return. He was the happiest and proudest painter in all Christendom, but there was somewhat to dash his elation. He was poor and undistinguished. He dared not ask old Gerard for the hand of his sweet ward. He must first win a reputation and a competence. There were, therefore, many dread uncertainties and cold days before him. He had to fight his way against sore odds, but he had won the heart of dear Rose Velderkaust, and that was half the battle. It is needless to say his exertions were redoubled, and his lasting celebrity proves that his industry was not unrewarded by success. These ardent labors, and worse still, the hopes that elevated and beguiled them, were, however, destined to experience a sudden interruption, of a character so strange and mysterious as to baffle all inquiry, and to throw over the events themselves a shadow of preternatural horror. Shalkin had one evening outstayed all his fellow pupils, and still pursued his work in the deserted room. As the daylight was fast falling, he laid aside his colors, and applied himself to the completion of a sketch on which he had expressed extraordinary pains. It was a religious composition, and represented the temptations of a pot-bellied Saint Anthony. The young artist, however destitute of elevation, had, nevertheless, discernment enough to be dissatisfied with his own work, and many were the patient erasures and improvements which saint and devil underwent, yet all in vain. The large, old-fashioned room was silent, and, with the exception of himself, quite emptied of its usual inmates. An hour had thus passed away, nearly two, without any improved result. Daylight had already declined, and twilight was deepening into the darkness of night. The patience of the young painter was exhausted, and he stood before his unfinished production, angry and mortified, one hand buried in the folds of his long hair, and the other holding the piece of charcoal which had so ill performed its office, and which he now rubbed, without much regard to the sable streaks it produced, with irritable pressure upon his ample Flemish inexpressibles. "Curse the subject," said the young man aloud. "Curse the picture, the devils, the saint." At this moment a short, sudden sniff uttered close behind him made the artist turn sharply round, and he now, for the first time, became aware that his labors had been overlooked by a stranger. Within about a yard and a half, and rather behind him, there stood the figure of an elderly man in a cloak and broad-brimmed conical hat. In his hand, which was protected with a heavy, gauntlet-shaped glove, he carried a long ebony walking-stick, surmounted with what appeared, as it glittered dimly in the twilight, to be a massive head of gold, and upon his breast, through the folds of the cloak, there shone the links of a rich chain of the same metal. The room was so obscure that nothing further of the appearance of the figure could be ascertained, and his hat threw his features into profound shadow. It would not have been easy to conjecture the age of the intruder, but a quantity of dark hair escaping from beneath his somber hat, as well as his firm and upright carriage, served to indicate that his years could not yet exceed 80, or thereabouts. There was an air of gravity and importance about the garb of the person, and something indescribably odd, I might say awful, in the perfect, stone-like stillness of the figure, that effectually checked the testy comment which had at once risen to the lips of the irritated artist. He therefore, as soon as he had sufficiently recovered his surprise, asked the stranger civilly to be seated, and desired to know if he had any message to leave for his master. "Tell Gerard Dow," said the unknown, without altering his attitude in the smallest degree, "that Mynheer Vanderhausen of Rotterdam desires to speak with him on tomorrow evening at this hour, and if he please, in this room, upon matters of weight, that is all." The stranger, having finished this message, turned abruptly, and, with a quick but silent step, quitted the room, before Shalkin had time to say a word in reply. The young man felt a curiosity to see in what direction the burgher of Rotterdam would turn on quitting the studio, and for that purpose he went directly to the window which commanded the door. A lobby of considerable extent intervened between the inner door of the painter's room and the street entrance, so that Shalkin occupied the post of observation before the old man could possibly have reached the street. He watched in vain, however. There was no other mode of exit. Had the queer old man vanished, or was he lurking about the recesses of the lobby for some sinister purpose? This last suggestion filled the mind of Shalkin with a vague uneasiness, which was so unaccountably intense as to make him alike afraid to remain in the room alone and reluctant to pass through the lobby. However, with an effort which appeared very disproportioned to the occasion, he summoned resolution to leave the room, and, having locked the door and thrust the key in his pocket, without looking to the right or left, he traversed the passage which had so recently, perhaps still, contained the person of his mysterious visitant, scarcely venturing to breathe till he had arrived in the open street. Meinherr Vanderhausen, said Gerard Dow within himself, as the appointed hour approached. Meinherr Vanderhausen of Rotterdam. I never heard of the man till yesterday. What can he want of me? A portrait, perhaps, to be painted? Or a poor relation to be apprenticed? Or a collection to be valued? Or, pshaw, there's no one in Rotterdam to leave me a legacy. Well, whatever the business may be, we shall soon know it all. It was now the close of day, and again every easel, except that of Schalken, was deserted. Gerard Dow was pacing the apartment with the restless step of impatient expectation, sometimes pausing to glance over the work of one of his absent pupils, but more frequently placing himself at the window, from whence he might observe the passengers who threaded the obscure by-street in which his studio was placed. "Said you not, Godfrey?" exclaimed Dow, after a long and fruitful gaze from his post of observation, and turning to Schalken, "that the hour he appointed was about 7 by the clock of the Stadthouse?"
"It had just told 7 when I first saw him, sir," answered the student.
"The hour is close at hand, then," said the master, consulting a horologe as large and as round as an orange. "Meinherr Vanderhausen from Rotterdam. Is it not so?"
"Such was the name."
"And an elderly man, richly clad," pursued Dow musingly.
"As well as I might see," replied his pupil. "He could not be young, nor yet very old, neither, and his dress was rich and grave, as might become a citizen of wealth and consideration."
At this moment the sonorous boom of the Stadthouse clock tolled, stroke after stroke, the hour of 7. The eyes of both master and student were directed to the door, and it was not until the last peal of the bell had ceased to vibrate that Dow exclaimed, "So, so, we shall have his worship presently, that is, if he means to keep his hour. If not, you may wait for him, Godfrey, if you court his acquaintance. But what, after all, if it should prove but a mummery got up by Van Karp, or some such wag? I wish you had run all risks, and cudgeled the old burgomaster soundly. I'd wager a dozen Rhenish his worship would have unmasked and pleaded old acquaintance in a trice."
"Here he comes, sir," said Schalken, in a low monitory tone. And instantly, upon turning towards the door, Gerard Dow observed the same figure which had, on the day before, so unexpectedly greeted his pupil Schalken.
There was something in the air of the figure which at once satisfied the painter that there was no masquerading in the case, and that he really stood in the presence of a man of worship. And so, without hesitation, he doffed his cap, and courteously saluting the stranger, requested him to be seated. The visitor waved his hand slightly, as if in acknowledgment of the courtesy, but remained standing. "I have the honor to see Meinherr Vanderhausen of Rotterdam," said Gerard Dow.
"The same," was the laconic reply of his visitor.
"I understand your worship desires to speak with me," continued Dow, "and I am here by appointment to wait your commands."
"Is that a man of trust?" said Vanderhausen, turning toward Schalken, who stood at a little distance behind his master.
"Certainly," replied Gerard.
"Then let him take this box and get the nearest jeweler or goldsmith to value its contents, and let him return hither with a certificate of the valuation."
At the same time he placed a small case about 9 inches square in the hands of Gerard Dow, who was as much amazed at its weight as at the strange abruptness with which it was handed to him. In accordance with the wishes of the stranger, he delivered it into the hands of Schalken, and repeating his direction, dispatched him upon the mission. Schalken disposed his precious charge securely beneath the folds of his cloak, and rapidly traversing 2 or 3 narrow streets, he stopped at a corner house, the lower part of which was then occupied by the shop of a Jewish goldsmith. He entered the shop, and calling the little Hebrew into the obscurity of its back recesses, he proceeded to lay before him Vanderhausen's casket. On being examined by the light of a lamp, it appeared entirely cased with lead, the outer surface of which was much scraped and soiled, and nearly white with age. This having been partially removed, there appeared beneath a box of some hard wood, which also they forced open, and after the removal of 2 or 3 folds of linen,
They discovered its contents to be a mass of golden ingots, closely packed, and, as the Jew declared, of the most perfect quality. Every ingot underwent the scrutiny of the little Jew, who seemed to feel an Epicurean delight in touching and testing these morsels of the glorious metal, and each one of them was replaced in its berth with the exclamation, "Mein Gott! How very perfect! Not one grain of alloy! Beautiful! Beautiful!" The task was at length finished, and the Jew certified under his hand the value of the ingots submitted to his examination to amount to many thousand rix dollars. With the desired document in his pocket, and the rich box of gold carefully pressed under his arm, and concealed by his cloak, he retraced his way, and entering the studio, found his master and the stranger in close conference. Jalkin had no sooner left the room, in order to execute the commission he had taken in charge, than Vanderhausen addressed Gerard Dow in the following terms. "I cannot tarry with you tonight more than a few minutes, and so I shall shortly tell you the matter upon which I come. You visited the town of Rotterdam some 4 months ago, and then I saw in the church of St. Lawrence your niece, Rose Velderkaus. I desire to marry her, and if I satisfy you that I am wealthier than any husband you can dream of for her, I expect that you will forward my suit with your authority. If you approve my proposal, you must close with it here and now, for I cannot wait for calculations and delays." Gerard Dow was hugely astonished by the nature of Mynheer Vanderhausen's communication, but he did not venture to express surprise, for besides the motives supplied by prudence and politeness, the painter experienced a kind of chill and oppression like that which is said to intervene when one is placed in unconscious proximity with the object of a natural antipathy. An undefined but overpowering sensation, while standing in the presence of the eccentric stranger, which made him very unwilling to say anything which might reasonably offend him. "I have no doubt," said Gerard, after two or three prefatory hems, "that the alliance which you propose will prove alike advantageous and honorable to my niece, but you must be aware that she has a will of her own, and may not acquiesce in what we may design for her advantage." "Do not seek to deceive me, Sir Painter," said Vanderhausen. "You are her guardian, she is your ward. She is mine if you like to make her so." The man of Rotterdam moved forward a little as he spoke, and Gerard Dow, he scarcely knew why, inwardly prayed for the speedy return of Schalken. "I desire," said the mysterious gentleman, "to place in your hands at once an evidence of my wealth, and a security for my liberal dealing with your niece. The lad will return in a minute or two with a sum in value 5 times the fortune which she has a right to expect from her husband. This shall lie in your hands, together with her dowry, and you may apply the united sum as suits her interest best. It shall be all exclusively hers while she lives. Is that liberal?" Dow assented, and inwardly acknowledged that fortune had been extraordinarily kind to his niece. The stranger, he thought, must be both wealthy and generous, and such an offer was not to be despised, though made by a humorist, and one of no very prepossessing presence. Rose had not very high pretensions, for she had but a modest dowry, which she owed entirely to the generosity of her uncle. Neither had she had any right to raise exceptions on the score of birth, for her own origin was far from splendid, and as the other objections, Gerard resolved, and indeed, by the usages of the time, was warned in resolving not to listen to them for a moment. "Sir," said he, addressing the stranger, "your offer is liberal, and whatever hesitation I may feel in closing with it immediately arises solely from my not having the honor of knowing anything of your family or station. Upon these points you can, of course, satisfy me without difficulty." "As to my respectability," said the stranger dryly, "you must take that for granted at present. Pester me with no inquiries. You can discover nothing more about me than I choose to make known. You shall have sufficient security for my respectability. My word, if you are honorable. If you are sordid, my gold." A testy old gentleman, thought Dow, He must have his own way, but, all things considered, I am not justified to declining his offer. I will not pledge myself unnecessarily, however.
You will not pledge yourself unnecessarily, said Vanderhausen, strangely uttering the very words which had just floated through the mind of his companion. But you will do so if it is necessary, I presume, and I will show you that I consider it indispensable. If the gold I mean to leave in your hands satisfy you, and if you don't wish my proposal to be at once withdrawn, you must, before I leave this room, write your name to this engagement. Having thus spoken, he placed a paper in the hands of the master, the contents of which expressed an engagement entered into by Gerard Dow, to give to Wilken Vanderhausen of Rotterdam, in marriage, Rose Velderkoust, and so forth, within 1 week of the date thereof. While the painter was employed in reading this covenant, by the light of a twinkling oil lamp in the far wall of the room, Schalken, as we have stated, entered the studio, and having delivered the box and the valuation of the Jew into the hands of the stranger, he was about to retire, when Vanderhausen called to him to wait, and, presenting the case and the certificate to Gerard Dow, he paused in silence until he had satisfied himself, by an inspection of both, respecting the value of the pledge left in his hands. At length he said, "Are you content?" The painter said he would fain have another day to consider. "Not an hour," said the suitor apathetically. "Well then," said Dow, with a sore effort, "I am content. It is a bargain." "Then sign at once," said Vanderhausen, "for I am weary." At the same time he produced a small case of writing materials, and Gerard signed the important document. "Let this youth witness the covenant," said the old man. And Godfrey Schalken unconsciously attested the instrument which forever bereft him of his dear Rose Velderkoust. The compact being thus completed, the strange visitor folded up the paper and stowed it safely in an inner pocket. "I will visit you tomorrow night at 9 o'clock at your own house, Gerard Dow, and will see the object of our contract." And so saying, Wilken Vanderhausen moved stiffly but rapidly out of the room. Schalken, eager to resolve his doubts, had placed himself by the window in order to watch the street entrance. But the experiment served only to support his suspicions, for the old man did not issue from the door. This was very strange, odd, nay, fearful. He and his master returned together, and talked but little on the way, for each had his own subjects of reflection, of anxiety, and of hope. Schalken, however, did not know the ruin which menaced his dearest projects.